is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket online, WTK.com. The MGO Blog Roundtable is brought to you by Homesure Lending. Homesure Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
Thank you, Ms. We're joined in studio by Brian Cook, Mr. MGO Blog himself. Brian, how are you this morning?
Hello, I'm good.
Hanging
I'm
in well. There? Hanging, so getting well. Getting sleep? Hanging in there?
Well, you know, it's the little one is a little bit less food intense right now, so it's good.
Finding time to get into work part two.
I mean, my wife does most of it because she's
your work or the
no the child care because she's got a semester off. So
oh, that's nice.
It is.
That's nice too. That's very helpful. Ed, how are you doing? How's the power rank?
I'm great. I'm fantastic.
How are your numbers looking?
They've been great. Yeah, I've been really happy with college football, especially this year.
They're predicting Michigan to win on Saturday.
They are.
All right, good. We'll get to that.
What's your favorite number?
What's my favorite number?
Yeah.
Meaning, like, what was my favorite game this week?
Three is the magic number.
There you go. Craig's not here because he was afraid of my withering scorn after something he said last week was wrong. I don't remember what.
Craig is very much under the weather,
if we
apparently.
Talked about every time that Craig was wrong, we'd have a lot to talk about.
Well, he's not necessarily wrong. He's just talking about stuff from, 1920. Like that, I can't tell if he's wrong or not because I'm just like, I don't know what Autogram was like.
Yeah, and you'd have to go find microfiche to get your information to find out if it's accurate or not. I remember, right. I miss microfiche. Maybe not. Maybe not. All right, guys, roundtable time, and let's jump right into the Wisconsin game. That was fun. That's kind of how you didn't script it, but yet it was still really fun. And Michigan took advantage of Wisconsin's coach making lots of interesting decisions, but Michigan also played some pretty darn good football.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we should start there. I don't know how Paul Christ finds himself in 3rd and 3 and throws the ball ever.
You must have been in the press box with us in spirit because every 3rd and 3 and 3rd and 2 that Jonathan Taylor wasn't on the field, we're like, huh?
Or 2nd and 7.
Yeah, right. All of a sudden, 2nd and 7 seems like an automatic passing down for Wisconsin. Let's go 5 wide or bring in the backup as the fullback type who, I mean, he had an okay game, but he's not Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, you remember that Indiana game from 2 years ago where Kevin Wilson goes for it three times in the first half? So they have this 15-play scoring drive, and for the rest of the game, Michigan's defensive tackles are just running on fumes. That could have happened in this game, except the dude punted. The dude punted with not a very good defense and not a very good punter and a top 10 S&P plus offense and Jonathan Taylor and that offensive line that was just grinding people off the ball, especially in the first half. So I think there's a version of this game where Michigan wins, but it's much, much hairier. And that's if you replace Paul Chris with a minimally functional.
So is he the play caller, not Joe Rudolph, the OC? I want to say, because I asked the question after the game, who bottled up Jonathan Taylor better, Dom Brown or Joe Rudolph?
I guess
it could have been Paul Chris.
Chris used to be the OC, and then I feel like he's probably got a lot of influence.
Yeah, like the Jim Harbaugh effect being when you're an offensive mind as the head coach.
Yeah, you might not be calling every play as the head coach.
But you're still the head coach.
But you still have the authority to be like, hey, let's run the ball.
With that guy.
But, it's 3rd and 2.
But they were also down 17.
Yeah, but not
running
but
the
not
ball
early.
First, second, and third down, which was essentially killing the clock for Michigan at points in that second half.
That's later in the game.
Right. They had a punt on 4th and 2 in Michigan territory, down 14 points in the third quarter. That is completely
asinine. It's asinine. Yeah.
Especially in a slow game where no one's
running out of possession. You're running out of possession.
To snap the ball.
Yeah.
When Michigan went for two after they scored to go up 19-17, I was like, this is probably the right decision, even though it was
it's generally early to chase points.
Yeah, 5 minutes into the third quarter, I'm like, this is really the start of the fourth quarter of a normal game because it's going to be so slow. So, yeah, that helped a lot. And long may it last. But, you know, I think the most important thing for Michigan is that their offensive line really kind of kicked into gear in the second half, especially on the ground. I mean, there wasn't much other than running on the ground. And that was like we did to Wisconsin what Wisconsin did to us. Not quite as bad. But like in the Rich Ride where they just ran power 28 straight times in the second half.
Yeah, that's the question and the thing that I posed. You know, for more or less a decade, and there were exceptions to this, but for more or less a decade, you watch Wisconsin play and you go, why aren't we playing like that? That's what Michigan used to look like. Why aren't we playing like that? And a little bit better with some better athletes and some right. better players. So where is that version of Michigan? And we saw that Saturday night.
Well, Wisconsin's defensive line took a couple of injuries that they just couldn't take. So they're playing like a freshman nose tackle at one of their defensive end spots. They're playing a redshirt freshman walk-on at the other one. And it showed. Like, Juwan Bushel-Beatty just gave it to this poor kid in the second half.
That was great.
I mean, he's going to come in for a big score in UFR, and it's going to be well-deserved because he was the motive force for a lot of what Michigan was able to do. Not only was he able to blow the dude off the ball, but when Michigan was running, like, down G's there was all that cutback action, it was usually because he had gotten most of a reach block on this kid. So when you're reaching a guy and then you're able to shove him 5 yards downfield, he's just in a no-win situation. He just couldn't cope with Juwan Bushel-Beatty.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how good this Wisconsin front seven is. We talked about that last week. They did get some sacks on Michigan this week, and you kind of look at a 12% sack rate, and that's not very good. But I think a lot of context goes into that. Patterson obviously should have thrown one away. That was the second sack. The first one looked like a kind of a covered sack where he had some time to throw. Didn't see anything. Got stuff for a one-yard loss. So I thought they were good on pass protection as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one thing that did kind of bother me, is that you know, Patterson is leaving pockets that are clean. He's not fighting guys downfield. And I felt like, you know, on that 1 yard sack, you know, there's only three guys in the route, and the two short guys are covered. But you have Nico Collins one on one against a corner downfield. There, you can throw him open. So if there's a shot, it's throwing it to your like 6'5" wide receiver against a defensive back. I think you got to take that,
especially against the depleted secondary too. And that Wisconsin was putting out there.
But I think we go game by game with Shea. He'll make a mistake like that, a couple of times he held the ball too long. The one where he waved the ball around, the ball got fumbled, and so there were a couple of plays that on the negative side. But it seems like the next week he's better at those things.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah,
this is a big week to prove that, obviously.
And I still feel like he's still got a little bit of that. His clock's running a little bit fast in his head, and that's why you see him coming out of the pocket. Like, he's still remembering what this offensive line. I mean, let's just assume that it's gotten better since game one. He's still got a little bit of that fast clock. That's what it seems like to me. Hopefully that'll get better, and his instincts will get better there.
Yeah, I mean,
it wasn't his best game for sure.
The rollout sack where he just waits forever and then should get rid of the ball and doesn't. I think he's got Gentry open early on that play. I mean, Gentry breaks the guy and flips. The guy has to flip his hips around. So there's like 3 or 4 yards of lateral separation. That's another guy you can throw open. But he's just, he's hesitant. He doesn't want to pull the trigger. And I'm not exactly sure what is going on in his head at this point in the season.
I mean, do you feel like that's been every game? I don't know.
No, it was mostly the Northwestern game. But this was a recurrence of the Northwestern game. And, you know, you don't expect that secondary to be able to pull that off just because they've had so many injuries. They lost Nelson for basically the whole game. Like, it's a little concerning.
I partly assume that he doesn't want to make a mistake, you know, if you're early on. But obviously, have you said that you have a 3 or 4 yard window that you could probably throw the ball, throw the guy open? I think that you're going to see that the week-to-week progression. Now, it may look differently this week because you're playing a tougher defense and you're going on the road. But you could play a better game and not initially have the same kind of production. Now, granted, the pass production wasn't great in the game last week, but it didn't have to be. I mean, the second half, the long scoring drive to open the second half, they went through 3 passes. They were incomplete, and everything else was on the ground or through penalties, and they ended up getting the touchdown.
Yeah, it was really 2 different halves, right? Because he was relatively efficient in the first half. Only really had
finish in the first half.
Right.
I don't know.
Only had 5-6 attempts in the second half, a couple throwaways, negative yardage to Evans on one of them. So, you know, I mean, it was definitely, I thought he was fine for the first half. Didn't really need to be great in the second half because they ran the ball, and that's great if you can do that to the defense.
I mean, he did throw an interception last week where he's moving around, he's finding Gentry, and he gets a bad deflection. I hope that's not weighing on him in any way whatsoever.
Right, because that's the right play.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So I felt he should have taken more shots.
It's actually kind of like what you're talking about with Nico on the one-on-one down the field, yeah. The same kind of, now the play to Gentry was a shorter throw, but it's a 1-on-1 with a 6-foot-8 guy.
Right.
And he just...
the guy makes a play, and that's fine. And
the other guy happened to be where the ball deflected, by the sideline, and it doesn't always happen that way.
Exactly. So I feel like there are opportunities downfield, and there should be opportunities even when guys are nominally covered. So I would like let it rip, man.
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly got the ability to let it rip, right? I mean,
well, if you just go back 12 months, right? I had a buddy send me this text message, and he goes, you know, getting ready for the game coming up, and he goes, he goes, and I won't mention the first of the line, but he goes, you know, this is not John O'Korn, this is Shea Patterson, this is not right, this is, and there are major differences between the night and day from last year to this year in a lot of aspects, because we start to get to the point where. You know, we're the guys that see, you know, Michigan fans in general, we see our team, so you see your warts more than everybody else because you're focused so much on them. And so we know how bad some of those things were last year. And while there are things that are issues still this year, they're just so different. And it's, you know, you're going to live with the ones that they have this year because that's kind of the nature of football. It's just so much better. It's just, I mean, I don't think anybody can even make a comparison. I have to go back, 2 weeks ago, the really bad question at the press conference. And Jim's like, I'll go with my daughter. I'll go with Katie, who doesn't watch football. And she says the quarterback's playing pretty well. And he's also making good decisions for the most part. And I know you really look at this closely. Seems like he's making pretty good decisions pre-snap at the line of scrimmage, but also in the run game where he's got to make decisions on the read game.
Well, in this game, yes. Previously, he'd been a little reticent to pull the ball. But maybe that was just a little con. Like,
well, that's something we've talked a lot about. You con game, you know, setting something up for down the road. You know, you have to set tendency, right? So the first couple games, the first few games, you're running early in the game, and be like, oh, you can't be so predictable. Don't run the ball on first down. Don't run the ball on the first play of the game. I don't think Michigan's run the ball on their first play of the game since like the third week of the season. So they've now created new tendencies, and now you're not really necessarily sure what Michigan may come out and do. They have a lot of formations. They have a lot of uniqueness, and they're giving you a lot of things to think about. Joe Milton package, McCaffrey as a slot guy. Mm-hmm.
Let's
extra things for a defense to spend time on in practice, something to think about because you have a limited amount of time you have to work.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing to me is after the 81-yard run from Patterson, they go back, they're inside the 5, and they go to the shotgun. And I'm like, when is the last time a Michigan team has been like, let's go in the gun and use the quarterback as a runner or threat in the red zone? I'm like, that's Rich Rod stuff, man. And it reminded me of like the Notre Dame game against Denard where he gets Michigan down to the 2 right at the end of that game. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, all right, let's go to the gun. Let's run like a little quarterback stretch play. And that's an easy 6. And Michigan is able to use Patterson's threat on the ground to get 2 runs where they're just going right off tackle. They're making the defensive end respect Patterson. And then they're paving whoever it is on the end of that line and getting an easy touchdown from the 5. So it opens up a lot of stuff. And I think you're going to have to rely on the fact that Michigan is now a team that has a threat at quarterback, and they'll have to respect it. So you're not going to get the 81-yard run anymore, but the rest of the stuff is going to open up.
I don't know. Maybe you will. Stephen Threet has one of those long runs under his belt that will never go away. You never know what a quarterback can. The fakes are really good. The mesh point, and you've talked a lot over the years about mesh points. And I think the guy that we used to all look back at, not a Michigan guy, but a guy used to all look back at as just great at riding that zone read until the last possible second, Juice Williams. He was so good at it.
Juice Williams. Wow.
But he was. That was like thing he was really good at. Like, he was really good at holding that ball with Rashard Mendenhall.
I mean,
and then pulling it out late. Now, there was one time that Shea tried to pull the ball out late, and Caron Higdon's like, no, you're not, and he held it on, he went over the touchdown.
Well, and that's something that gives you an indication that it is a real read.
Correct, right.
And we haven't really seen that before, and now with that, you can get some play action off of it, because if you're into the mesh point, then linebackers are going to start coming.
Isn't the P the next part of this, right? You have the R and the O.
Yes.
Now we can add the P, and maybe that's something that they're going to add in. We haven't seen it because they keep adding new elements each week to the offense. Maybe that's this week's added element.
Well, and I was watching the Minnesota game against Ohio State, and man, every RPO they ran was wide open. And if, you know, Anikstad missed a couple that were like open slants near the goal line, it's like, it could have gone another way. So.
Yeah. Well, and they gashed him for 6 yards of carry, which you do not expect from a Minnesota offense against an Ohio State defense.
They got to tighten that up before the end of the season, or maybe they won't.
They got to tighten it up before Saturday.
They don't have to do anything.
That's just, well, yeah,
they can,
exactly.
They are the best team in the league, and they don't have to practice for the rest of the season.
Are they still, I didn't look this week with the updated stats, are they still the worst in the league of giving up 30-plus yard plays or more?
I haven't
probably.
Checked.
Yeah, they were going into last week.
They're 91st in my adjusted yards.
They were going into last week. I didn't look following the game last week against Minnesota.
It's a lot of big plays.
And they probably give up a few of those against Purdue this week, because Purdue may not, they're not going to beat them, I don't think, but Purdue could definitely put up a few points and put up some plays on them.
I mean, it'll be interesting. The thing that you can't have against Ohio State is you can't let them run after the catch. So they have the most explosive plays on short passes in the country. So, you know, Haskins, like the winning drive against Penn State is all screens. So he's a good quarterback, but his numbers are a little bit pushed up by the fact that there's so much yak.
Yeah, they're all behind the line of scrimmage and really close to the line of scrimmage. We're going to talk more about Michigan-Wisconsin, put that game behind us. We'll preview Michigan and Michigan State. Also, there's news from the Michigan side of things as a player's leaving the program. We'll get to that as well here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket.
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket, online WTK.com. The Engel Blog Roundtable is brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
Thank you, Ms. Got Brian Cook here in studio. Ed Fang is in studio. Sam is in the Twin Cities, and Craig Ross is in the infirmary at his house, is what it sounds like. So,
poor Craig. In Minnesota.
So he went to go see Barnhart. That's the kid's name, right?
Bryce Benhart.
There you go. Bryce Benhart. See, I don't know all the names. When people ask me recruiting questions, you know my answer always is I have the exact same answer. Every single kid that somebody asks Sam. That's my answer to every single one. There's also two basketball kids that are ranked in the top 100 that are both power forwards that he is going to see today.
That's a lot of 6'8 guys.
He is. So I told him to get a neck massage when he got back. He said just have them all sit down, and then they're all the same height. But Sam is on a recruiting trip. You'll get more.
That's good. He went out to Jackson Hill, and then, you know,
I don't know if there's a causation, if that's the right word to use here.
Let's just talk like there is.
But we'll hope there is, because a 6'8" block out the sun kind of offensive lineman would be a nice addition to the maize and blue.
I'm gonna give that a thumbs up.
Speaking of additions, or in this case subtractions, Drew Singleton announced that he is, or is reported that he is, and it's been confirmed that he has left the football program. It's disappointing because I've met the kid. He's been in studio, really nice kid, a really good family. But it's a position that seems like Sam was talking about it. They're fairly set there right now, so it seems like it's not too bad of a loss.
I don't think it'll have a huge impact on Michigan. It's bad to lose a guy before. Like, you'd want him to go through, like, the who gets to replace Bush Derby.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if he doesn't make that, maybe he wants to move on. This is a little bit early for, like, it to be late early. But, you know, they have Gill and Ross who are splitting time in one spot, so you're presuming that those guys are the starters next year after Bush is in the NFL probably. And then Jordan Anthony's actually coming in before him when they do put Bush on the bench late in blowouts. And you have Cameron Grown coming off a red shirt next year, so, you know, they're going to be fine.
Yeah, they have four guys for those two spots, and there's another kid in the class, and there'll be other guys that there'll be opportunities. So, yeah, disappointing loss. You said, I like to see them get their chance as a redshirt sophomore, redshirt junior to go through the growth.
Yeah.
And you're behind a guy, you're behind Devin Bush. He's, you know, the guy's a first, second team All-American type, first round draft pick type.
Well, and when they were talking about the weak side linebacker battle this spring, it was like, okay, it's Gill and Ross, and then a little bit behind is Singleton. So, like, that's a guy who could have come through and been a real contributor, maybe not next year, but the year after. I don't know. So it's a little disappointing for him to pull the trigger this early.
But he will find out. Sam already said that as soon as his name went into the database, he's gotten interest, and he's going to go somewhere. He'll play someone the next few years. And hopefully it's just not against a team that Michigan ever faces. And hopefully we wish him we wish him success to luck, and as long as it's not against Michigan. So there is that news. But on the defensive side of things, you know, Michigan did get aided by play calling, but they also played pretty good football against Wisconsin on the defensive side. When they had to make plays, they made Hornibrook look like the bad Hornibrook. We've seen him play like really good Hornibrook at times. That guy didn't show up until like the last drive of the game.
No, it was shocking. And then when I went over what was happening, I kind of figured that he was unable to set his feet. So Michigan didn't get awesome pressure, but there were enough like pocket pushing opportunities that Hornibrook was not on his spot. And when you get him off his spot, his efficiency just plummets. So they third and three that they're going for, and they're on the ball. But I think it's Uche and Marshall are both able to drive their guys into Hornibrook, and he can't finish his follow through, and that wing's wide. And there's another one where Mike Dwumfor is able to like just kind of burrow towards the quarterback, And Hornibrook's like, I don't know if I should go or I should stay. And he starts moving his feet around. He pulls the trigger on that, and that's wide, too. And that was actually good because that one was going to be intercepted for a touchdown by Brandon Watson, who is using this slingshot technique on these drag routes. Not technically legal, but he hasn't been called for it yet, so let's hope that continues.
Shh. Let's keep that one under wraps. We won't talk about that part anymore. The next question, though, is so then how does it – because Wisconsin's offensive line is pretty darn good. So how does it translate to the next games? Because they're going from a pretty good offensive line to not nearly as good offensive line this week.
Well, I thought Quiddy Pay had a great game. Like, he was able to pick up the bonus offensive lineman. You know, they put six or seven guys out there from time to time, and he's able to take those guys and drive them, despite the fact that he's a sophomore defensive end and they're Wisconsin offensive lineman. So he cuts off, you know, two or three plays, and he doesn't actually get blown up by anybody. The defensive tackles all took turns getting blown up once or twice or three times each. They had their moments, but they also had their bad moments. And Pay was interesting because he didn't get got at any point. So that's really encouraging, especially if Gary is not quite ready to go for this game, because as a run defender against the best run offense Michigan is going to face this year, he came out with flying colors. So the other thing that I thought was interesting is you get Aubrey Solomon back, and Aubrey Solomon flashes a couple things. Aubrey Solomon has a couple of second-half plays where he's able to just fire off into Ben Schwazel. That's not his name.
Ben Schwazel. The right guard.
That guy. And he's an All-American, and he's going to be an NFL player, and Solomon is able to fire off into him and put him in the backfield twice. So that's like a major development for Michigan. If the defense is going to take that extra step the rest of the way, it's going to be Aubrey Solomon getting healthy and being that five-star that he was as a recruit.
Needing that push up the middle. And it seems to have gotten better week to week, and as long as they can get healthier, that's going to be a big step to get that push, because obviously you get the push up the middle as those guys are coming on the outside. That makes that defensive front that much more lethal. So there's that. I also want to – the safety's making plays. It gets hidden. I know you go back and you watch the tapes pretty close. You grade the games. There were multiple plays, and I know Kinnell had a couple. Metellus had a few where there were like 5 or 6 yard runs by Wisconsin, but if the safeties don't step up and make a play, the plays are a lot bigger, and they seem to have gotten pretty good at cutting down on giving up those bigger versions of those plays.
Well, Metellus gets an absolute nightmare on their Wisconsin touchdown drive early, where – you know, Taylor pops out the backside of a play, and he's the deep safety. And that's a play that Taylor turns into 80 yards a lot. But he was able to fend off a stiff arm and just kind of escort him to the sideline. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not coming here to be a hero. He's not going to come and, like, stick Jonathan Taylor 20 yards downfield.
Just save the play.
But just, like, the sideline is your friend. Use your sideline. And Kinnell had kind of an up-and-down game, but he was clearly the guy that Michigan was inserting into the box to kind of give them a numbers advantage. And he had one really
in the run lane. Yeah, there was a couple of there was the one in there.
But he was always going to have a tough time coming out positive. I mean, I think he was even against Wisconsin. And I'll take that. You know, just because it's not my grading is not opponent adjusted.
Right, so I got you. Yeah, I saw a couple of I kept writing down the names of the safeties. I know Metellus. It was more so there were a few plays like the one that riding them out of bounds where you hit the guy after 6 yards, you're like, well, 6 yard run's a solid run for the offense, but you realize there's a whole lot more behind him if the safety gets run over or gets stiff-armed or whatever it might be. The safeties are coming along. It seems like safety play at Michigan, which has been a concern since, like, Tripp Wellborn, I'm not saying it's not a concern at times, but it seems like it's not the concern maybe we thought it could have been coming into the year.
Well, I think Don Brown did a really good job of protecting them in coverage in this game. So on the very first pass that Hornibrook throws, Devin Bush undercuts a slant and gets his hand on it. And that was the last slant Wisconsin threw until the last play of the game for them. And that's, you know, you've got these trap coverages where the cornerbacks are coming off and the Hornibrook thinks he's throwing into safety coverage. He's throwing into David Long's coverage. So they were really able to confuse Hornibrook, make him awkward. And I don't remember very many instances where the safety's coverage got tested in this game.
Yeah, I mean, the past defense has been incredible. They're by far the first best team in terms of my adjusted yards per play. I mean, even with the slants they're giving up, Don Brown's done a great job with the pass defense.
They're a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun to watch. They get after it at every spot. They're very aggressive. They're going to get caught here and there. It's going to happen, but they're really fun to watch, and I'm looking forward to this matchup. We're going to preview the Michigan State game in the next segment. I do want to ask you one non-Michigan question before we go to the break. Ed, we'll start with you on this one. Your thoughts on the Nick Bosa news?
Well, he wants to get paid, and he's not getting paid at Ohio State. I don't know. I can't make a big deal out of this. Like, okay, he left.
Yeah, I saw one
Ohio
guy.
State's defense wasn't great before he left. Oregon State gashed him, and I know that's not just Nick Bosa's fault. He played for half the TCU game. They gashed him. So I don't know. I just can't get too excited about this. I mean, we can make statements about there's no loyalty to your college. I don't care to make those. I just care about how Ohio State's defense is going to play going forward, and that's the biggest question to me.
It's strange. So Ohio State knows how to prepare people for the NFL draft. Every major college does. Like, what is leaving the team get you?
Yeah, and that's the part. Yeah, so Sam was, we don't have a lot.
Because maybe you have to play, and then risk getting hurt again?
Well, see, so there's a dearth of information beyond the injury part.
LJ Scott and opt out.
But LJ Scott's just still in driver's ed. He just can't find his way to the facility. With Bosa, he was not going to be back on the field before the end of the season, in the regular season. The injury and the surgery, it was going to be a really tight timeline to be back before the end of the regular season. So what I've actually found odd is that it became such a big story, because guys get hurt, have season-ending injuries all the time.
I mean, he's not going to be back for like a potential playoff game.
So his dad said his dad then said he might not be cleared in time to play football until around the time of the playoff, if at all in time for the playoff, because it's a long recovery time. So if he's not clear to actually have full contact until then.
It's true, but even so, like, what's the downside to being in Columbus? I feel there's a lot of downsides to being in Columbus.
Oh, there's tons of downsides to being in Columbus.
But
we feel, so the speculation is that he is being pressured to come back sooner than he should. And if he takes
because
that option,
their defense is terrible right
and
now.
And so he takes that option away from the coaches by saying, "I'm withdrawing from school."
I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's an odd thing.
It's not. It's a symptom of an unhealthy program.
Well, and I think
maybe true as well.
It's become a story just because of what we've seen in college football. Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette.
But a bowl game is so. But a bowl game is so different.
But it's kind of the equivalent if you didn't think he was coming back until.
We're not talking about the potential like Louisiana Lafayette Bowl. Like, you know, it's
right. No one has sat out a playoff game, and that's what this. In theory, right. He could be if he could get back in time. No one's had a playoff game.
But there's still a lot of ifs there.
There are tons of ifs.
I mean,
I'm not crying about it. It is what it is.
I don't want to play
the Michigan game anyway.
I don't want to be Mr. Old Man Sports Writer here, but we talk about how there are things that are more important than money, and it's really a shame that college football is all about the money. So in the context of that, I'm like, yeah, okay, if everybody around you is a vampire, then I guess go get paid. But I also kind of feel like the reason I care about college football is because there's something that isn't let's go get paid that's to it. And that's not like if they paid the players, I'd be mad. But like, you know, it's the team. And I just feel, I don't know, I get very like Dan Shaughnessy, I guess, a little bit.
If Rashawn had, because Rashawn's not in this scenario. And despite what people are, there's a lot of speculation, but Rashawn's not in the same scenario. He doesn't have a season-ending injury. But if he had decided to have shoulder surgery, and it would be a three-month window, because an AC joint shoulder surgery is about a three-month recovery, and he had said, you know, I'm going to go and go home to rehab so I can be close to home and et cetera, like, to me, I'd be like, good luck. Like, I want him around the team. I'd love to have him around the team. But if that's what's best, why do you go to college? You go to college as a student or as a student athlete to get ready for your vocation. And if the best thing for them is to be at home to rehab, and maybe Bosa wants to rehab by his doctor, which is in Philadelphia.
Then I think that you have a symptom of something bad going on in your program. If the best place for you to be is not the program.
Well, that's true, too. Well, I don't think it would happen at U of M. I looked at a picture of Urban Meyer, and that, to me, is a symptom of issues with the program.
But let's talk about that, right? I mean, because the Ohio State defense clearly has their issues. We were talking last week off air about how they brought in Alex Grinch, I think his name is,
yes,
as the co-DC this year.
I think maybe what, the I issues think there. What happened there is they were expecting Schiano to get a job. They
right.
were encouraging Schiano to get a job.
Wait, so but stop there. Why were they encouraging him? Because... I mean, he's done a great job.
Well, I mean,
2 years.
You saw what happened with Drevno. Like sometimes, like there's just like this face saving thing where it's like, we would like to move on from you, but you got to like make
it
look
but
good.
That's what happens when your unit doesn't perform well.
Right.
His unit's performed fantastic. I mean, it's held that team together through ups and downs of JT Barrett over the past 2 years.
Whoa.
Wait.
That's a take.
Okay, they've had their bad games, but they in general have been excellent over the past 2 years while Shiano's been the coordinator.
I mean, they've had their ups. I mean, there's just sometimes you feel like it's time to move on for reasons that might not be public.
Okay.
And perhaps we're seeing the reason that Ohio State was like, eh, why don't you?
Yeah. I mean, they also lost 39 tackles from loss from last year from the front seven. Denzel Ward, the fourth pick of the draft.
It shouldn't matter at Ohio State.
Exactly. It shouldn't matter at Ohio State, but through seven games, it has mattered.
This year it has. We'll talk a lot about Ohio State going into the game at the end of the season, but there's a big game coming up this weekend, fellas. Michigan versus Michigan State, and we'll preview that on the other side of the break here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket.
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket online, WTK.com. The MGO Blog Roundtable is brought to you by Homesure Lending. Homesure Lending is a local company, and you work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
Coming up in a little bit, Inside the Huddle with Michael Spath, along with the man you just heard, The Miz, and Zach Shaw as well. But we have the MGO Blog Roundtable for about 10 more minutes here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket. Although less of a roundtable, more of a triangle today. Craig is not here. Sam is not here as well. Brian Cook is here. Ed Fang is here. We're going to preview Michigan State. Before we do that, I wanted to ask you a question based on Joel Klatt's comment yesterday. You see this? Joel Klatt said that Michigan is now the favorite in the Big Ten.
No comment.
That's a good answer. I said, ask me on Monday. I said, ask me Monday. Wait till after this weekend to answer that question.
I think Michigan's rising. I think Ohio State is not as good on the defensive side of the ball. I think you need to start asking questions about who the best team in the Big Ten is.
No comment.
We'll ask that question next week after this game that we're going to preview now here on the Michigan Insider. I like Brian's answer. No comment's a good – I like Joel a lot, but I think that I would – as I said, it's a pump the brakes kind of thing until you get past the win a big game on the road, which is coming up this Saturday, Michigan State. So, Brian, take us to the matchup. It might at the end of the, it might look better at the end of the year, but it's not a road game. But that's the question.
Is it even a road game?
So, Michigan State, the matchup. We'll start with the Michigan offense. We talked about it earlier. The offensive line's really coming along, but this is a different defense than they're going to face than they faced against Wisconsin.
It's a really strange defense. They're the best team in the country defending the run, and I think there's some legitimate reasons for that. And this is opponent adjusted as well, but they like give up 65% percentage passing. They're very, very soft on the outside. They just can't really get to the passer very well. They have one guy who can do that, and that's Willekes, and he's, like, not great. He's good. And then it's like people keep trying to run on him. I'm like, stop it. Why are you doing this?
So this is a throw-first kind of game again.
I mean, it should be. I mean, hopefully Patterson is a little bit better at finding the open guys in this one. And, of course, they're going to bring out a bunch of stuff that they haven't seen all year. So it's going to be, you know, there's going to be some hiccups early before Michigan can figure out what their game plan is.
So it's the most important key to avoid the slow start on the road, which we've seen be a major issue?
I mean, they've been sandbagging for most of the year for this. It's good that Penn State may have used up a couple things. But, you know, I feel like it's always going to be a bit of a slow start just because we have a team. Michigan's coming off a Wisconsin game where they played some of their cards, and Michigan State is willing to do whatever it takes to get an advantage in this game. So a slow start is kind of inevitable.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, I have them at fifth in terms of rush defense, 60th in terms of pass defense. And I always, like, even heading into last season, I thought had some questions in that secondary. They were obviously pretty good last year, but maybe we're starting to see that they're not as good as we thought they were because
they've had a couple injuries, and it's just not the same kind of Michigan State defense. You'll watch them play, and it's not all quarters all the time with super aggressive safeties. They're playing off a little bit more. They're playing three deep a little bit more. So they have some limitations. And
So what do you think the run defense is? Are they just have a couple tackles that are really stuffing?
Both their defensive tackles are excellent. Raekwon Williams, I think, is one of the best guys in the Big Ten. Whichever Panishuk is in there, I think there's 75 of those guys. But they're both very, very good. Willekes is a very good run defender, and they fire on run action a lot. So, you know, if you can get that play action game working, their safeties will come down a little bit, but not so much this year. So they're playing a little bit of bend but don't break in the secondary. So I think there might be some opportunities if you can actually sell them And like the token play action isn't going to do it for Michigan. But if they have some new approaches that are able to get those linebackers to trigger, then I think you could have Zach Gentry open for some big jump plays.
Was this where we were talking about earlier when the P part of the RPO, or even if they're actually straight play actions, but they look like they're RPO kind of plays, where because the read option stuff was so successful last week, that in theory, it should open up more of those things because the safety's eye, the linebackers and the safety's eyes should be maybe a little more confused than they were even just a couple of weeks ago?
Well, there's a difference between just kind of like holding out the ball to the running back and being like, oh, I guess we're going to run a pass play, and then like going into a mesh point. If you go into the mesh point, people will trigger on that, and then you have options, even if it's not a true RPO, but just a deeper play action. And you're going to expose yourself maybe to a little bit more pressure that way, but I think it's worth the risk.
It's a fun play. I mean, when the RPO is at its best or the true mesh point, I mean, it's pretty lethal football play.
Yeah, I hate it because I've only seen it used against us. So I'm like, that's stupid communist football. Why don't we run it?
Gerald.
We should run it.
I still haven't quite figured out how that's communist football from Pat Fitzgerald's comment, but that's fine.
Well, Craig Ross would know.
True. I understand his point. Fitzgerald's point, I think, had less to do about the play as much as what the linemen do, as far as how far down the field they're able to go, because they're trying to make you read a run play by going a couple of steps downfield, but they're not really supposed to go that far downfield when it turns into a pass play.
Well, the nice thing about the stuff that Michigan's running right now with the down G stuff where it looks more like a stretch is you have some time to get people downfield because those guys are kind of running parallel to the line of scrimmage. So you can maybe work some things other than just the standard slant.
Did you see more diversity in the run game? Because I know the down G was the play that was working most successfully for the first, and then you talked about how they were going to have to get away from it a little bit more because it would be easy to diagnose and eventually stop.
I did. I also saw some plays that I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, what is this thing with people pulling in both directions? It's so there were some tweaks in there, so I think they've got some other stuff in the playbook that I'm hoping to see, but yeah, there was some weird stuff. And then kind of their bread and butter in the second half was, okay, we're going to run down G, but we're going to run it like a stretch. And then you're going to trigger really hard because you see down G, and then we're going to get a cutback on it. So that was a good tactical move.
So are you in the camp of pay Ed Warner a bunch of money and keep him around and make him an associate head coach or whatever?
Is there anybody
else
on earth who is not? This is like people asking
Michigan
about
people that are in that. Yes, Ohio State people are like, we want him back.
Like 3 weeks ago, Don Brown got asked about the haters, and I'm like, there are no Don Brown haters.
Oh, wait. The Michigan fan base is big enough that there are Don Brown haters.
There are no Don Brown haters.
There are.
I mean, there's nobody.
There are. I have gotten emails from plenty of them. There are Don Brown haters.
There are
too aggressive, too much this, not enough that. There's always
too many big plays.
But as Jim Harbaugh gave the Bump Elliott quote a few weeks ago, there are three things every man in America can do, and the third one is coach football. Obviously, that's, you know,
made me think about the Carlin quote of like, think about how stupid the average person is, and then half of them are stupider than that.
So we got a tweet here from John S. Swartz who says, we've seemed to struggle to pass on zone D. Does MSU play any zone?
Yes. I mean, they're a 4-3 over team that plays almost exclusively zone. They'll match up a little bit. It'll be a bit of a test. I mean, Michigan was able to pass against zone against Maryland pretty well. And this might be more of a Maryland thing with some open lanes and some soft coverage. One thing I really don't want to see is I don't want to see Michigan State allowed to play off like the last few teams have been. So, like, if you've got Chris Evans and you're empty and the guy's a linebacker and he's 8 yards off,
just throw it to him and let him make a play.
Yeah, and then you got to make them come up.
You assume it, and as we've seen it from game one to game two, that they've added like checks and stuff. They've been able to give more to Shea as they go week to week. You have to imagine there's a check at the line or it's coming where if they're playing soft, that you just do one of those hand wavy things or whatever, or tap the side of your head, and that's the sign that I'm throwing the ball to that guy real quickly over here because he's open.
I mean, they haven't done that yet. I feel like it's got to be coming because it's a real obvious hole in Michigan's strategic approach on offense right now, as you're allowing people to play in the parking lot at cornerback.
And they have added things every single week, so why not that be the next part of the next wrinkles that are coming in?
You know, a few weeks ago I was complaining about like, there are read option game is stupid and bad. And I'm going to say that they fixed it. And maybe they'll fix that.
All right, guys. Prediction time. Ed, what do your numbers say? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, my numbers say about Michigan by, 3 or 4. I think the line's at a touchdown, which suggests Michigan's about a 10-point 10 points better on neutral field than Michigan State, I think the right answer is there. I think Michigan should win, barring playing a terrible game or turnovers or whatnot.
That's what the numbers say. Brian, what do you say?
You know, this looks like a game that Michigan should win easily, but I've said that about many Michigan State games, and it never seems to happen. I think we're going to see a pretty tight first quarter, second quarter, and then hopefully Michigan's superiority on both lines should tell.
Thanks, guys. Always great to have you in here. Sam will be back next week. We'll hopefully be recapping a fun Michigan victory over Michigan State, and then we get to preview the Bob Ufer broadcast next week. Or we'll just start talking more Michigan football, and actually basketball will be right around the corner, and hockey is going on. So we'll have a lot to get to as you guys continue to come in every Thursday for the MGo Blog Roundtable.
Better than